It looks like President Obama has is taking the stage now following that introduction. We're going to go live to the Uptown Theater. President Obama speaking to Kansas Cityans about the economy.
Hello, Kansas City. Well, it is good to be back in Kansas City, back in the Midwest. And I have to say, I love these old theaters. I mean, they are unbelievable. This is just gorgeous. It is good to see Governor Jay Nixon here today. Congressman Emanuel Cleaver's here. Congressman Lacey Clay is here. Mayor Sly James is here. And you're here. All of you are here. Now, if you have a seat, feel free to sit down. Because I don't want everybody starting to fall out. If you don't have a seat, don't sit down. But bend your knees a little bit. It's always good to spend a little time in Kansas City. Last night, I had a chance to get some barbecue at Arthur Bryan's. Now they had run out of coleslaw, which I asked. I said, "Did you save some coleslaw for me?" They said no. They hadn't saved any. I'm sorry. What are you hollering about? Okay. I believe in God. Thanks for the prayer. Amen. Thank you. Now, thank you. Now, I just want to be on record, though, because people have been asking me this question. I deal with a lot of tough issues. I am not going to decide who makes the best barbecue in Kansas City. Bryant's barbecue was tasty, and Victor's right, I did plow through it pretty good. But I have not had enough samples to make a definitive judgment. So I'm going to have to try some other barbecue next time I come in. I have to say, by the way, Victor was not shy about eating either. So I just want to be clear. But I had a chance, I went there for the barbecue, but also I went there because I wanted to have a chance to talk to Victor and three other people from the area who took the time to sit down with me and talk because they had written letters to me. Some of you may know. Well, you know what? If I had known, I would have had you over for dinner too. But what happens is every night I read 10 letters that we receive. We get 40,000 correspondents. And then our correspondence office chooses 10, sort of a sample for me to take a look at. And it gives me a chance to hear directly from the people I serve. And folks tell me their stories. They tell me their worries and their hopes and their hardships, their successes. Some say I'm doing a good job, But other people say you're an idiot. No, I mean, this is how I know that I'm getting a good sample of letters. Last week, a young girl wrote to ask me, why aren't there any women on our currency? And then she gave me a long list of possible women to put on our dollar bills and quarters and stuff, which I thought was a pretty good idea. And now Victor wrote to me to tell me about his life in Butler, and he told me that he had been unemployed for a while after he and his wife had their first child, but he refused to quit. He earned his degree, found a full-time job. He now helps folks with disabilities live independently, and he's just a good-hearted man, and you can tell really he's doing great stuff. And Victor described how he got through some tough times because of his Christian faith and his determination which are things that, you know, government programs and policies can't replace. You know, you've got to have that sense of purpose and perseverance. That has to come, from inside. You can't legislate that. But he also said that he was able to afford health insurance because of the Affordable Care Act. And he also said that because of the income-based repayment plan that we had put in place, where you only have to pay 10% of your income maximum in repaying your loans each month, that was what allowed him and his family to keep a roof over their heads and support themselves. And so I'm here because Victor is the sort of person I'm working for every single day. Somebody who never quits, somebody who's doing everything right, somebody who believes in the American dream, somebody who just wants a chance to build a decent life for himself and his family. And that's the vast majority of Americans. That's who I'm fighting for right here in Kansas City and all across this country. That's why I ran for president in the first place, to fight for folks like that. Now, we all know it hasn't always been easy. You know, the crisis that hit near the end of my campaign back in 2008, it would end up costing millions of Americans their jobs, their homes, their sense of security. But we have fought back. We have got back off our feet. We have dusted ourselves off. Today, our businesses have added nearly 10 million new jobs over the past 52 months. Construction is up. Manufacturing is back. Our energy, our technology, our auto industries, they're all booming. The unemployment rate is at its lowest point since September of 2008. It's dropped faster than any time in 30 years. This morning we found out that in the second quarter of this year, our economy grew at a strong pace, and businesses are investing. Workers are building new homes. Consumers are spending. America's exporting goods around the world. So the decisions that we made to rescue our economy, to rescue the auto industry, to rebuild the economy on a new foundation, to invest in research and infrastructure, education, all those things are starting to pay off. The world's number one oil and gas producer, it's not Saudi Arabia. It's not Russia. It's the United States of America. We've tripled the amount of electricity we get from wind. We've increased by 10 times the amount of electricity we get from the sun. And all that is creating tens of thousands of jobs across the country. Our high school graduation rate is at a record high. More young people are earning their college degrees than ever before. 401ks have recovered their value. Home prices are rising. And yes, millions of families now have the peace of mind, just like Victor's family does, of getting quality, affordable health care when you need it. It makes a difference in people's lives. And look, Kansas City, none of this is an accident. It's thanks to the resilience and resolve of the American people. It's also thanks to some decisions that we made early on. And now America's recovered faster and come farther than just about any other advanced country on Earth. And for the first time in more than a decade, if you ask business leaders around the world, what's the number one place to invest, they don't say China anymore. They say the United States of America, and our lead is growing. So sometimes you wouldn't know it if you were watching the news, but there are a lot of good reasons to be optimistic about America. We hold the best cards. Things are getting better. The decisions we make now can make things even better than that. In fact, the decisions we make now will determine whether the economic gains that we're generating are broad-based, whether they just go to a few at the top, or whether we got an economy in which the middle class has grown and folks who are trying to get into the middle class have more rungs on the ladder, right? Whether ordinary folks are benefiting from growth. And that's what's at stake right now, making sure our economy works for every American. See, I'm glad that GDP has grown, and I'm glad that corporate profits are high, and I'm glad that the stock market is booming. But what really I want to see is a guy working 9 to 5 and then working some overtime. I want that guy making more than the minimum wage. You know, what I really want is somebody who's worked for 20, 30 years being able to retire with some dignity and some respect. You know, what I really want is a family, you know, that they have the capacity to save so that when their child is ready to go to college, they know they can help, and that it's affordable, and that child's not going to be burdened down with debt. That's the measure of whether the economy is working. Not just how well it's doing overall, but is it doing well for ordinary folks who are working hard every single day and aren't always getting a fair shot? That's what we're fighting for. That's why I ran for president. That's what I'm focused on every day. And that's what sometimes Washington forgets. You know, your lives and what you're going through day to day, the struggles, but also the opportunities and the hopes and the good things, but sometimes the rough things that happen, that's more important than some of the, you know, phony scandals or the, you know, fleeting stories that you see. This is the challenge of our time. How do we make sure we've got an economy that is working for everybody? Now, all of you are doing your part to help bring America back. You're doing your job. Imagine how much further along we'd be, how much stronger our economy would be, if Congress was doing its job too. We'd be doing great. Every time I meet some of these folks who've written me letters, we sit down and talk, and they say, what's going on in Washington? What they tell me is, if Congress had the same priorities that ordinary families did, if they felt the same sense of urgency about things like the cost of college, or, you know, the need for, you know, increases in the minimum wage, or, you know, how we're, you know, making child care more affordable and improving early childhood education, or, you know, if that's what they were thinking about, we could help a lot more families. A lot more people would be getting ahead. The economy would be doing better. We could help a lot more families. And we should. We should be relentlessly focused on what I call an opportunity agenda, one that creates more jobs by investing in what's always made our economy strong, making sure that we're on the cutting edge when it comes to clean energy, making sure that we're rebuilding our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our ports, our airports, our locks, our dams. Making sure that advanced manufacturing is happening right here in the United States so we can start bringing manufacturing jobs back to the Midwest and all across the country, jobs that pay a good wage. Investing in research and science that leads to new American industries. Training our workers. You know, really making a job training program and using our community colleges in ways that allow people to constantly retrain for the new opportunities that are out there and to prepare our kids for the global competition that they're going to face. Making sure that hard work pays off with higher wages and higher incomes. If we do all these things, we're going to strengthen the middle class, will help more people get into the middle class. Businesses, by the way, will do better. If folks have more money in their pocket, then businesses have more customers. Businesses have more customers, they hire more workers. You hire more workers, they spend more money. You spend more money, business have more customers, they hire even more workers. You start moving in the right direction. But it starts not from the top down, it starts from the middle out, the bottom up. Now, so far this year, Republicans in Congress keep blocking or voting down just about every idea that would have some of the biggest impact on middle class and working class families. They've said no to raising the minimum wage. They said no to fair pay, making sure that women have the ability to make sure that they're getting paid the same as men for doing the same job. They've said no for fixing our broken immigration system. Rather than investing in education, they actually voted to give another massive tax cut to the wealthiest Americans. And they've been pushing to gut the rules that we put in place after the financial crisis to make sure big banks and credit card companies wouldn't take advantage of consumers or cause another crisis. So they haven't been that helpful. They have not been as constructive as I would have hoped. And these actions, you know, they come with a cost. When you block policies that would help millions of Americans right now, not only are those families hurt, but the whole economy is hurt. So that's why this year my administration, what we said was, we want to work with Congress, we want to work with the Republicans and Democrats to get things going, but we can't wait. So if they're not going to do anything, we'll do what we can on our own. And we've taken more than 40 actions aimed at helping hardworking families like yours. That's when we act, when Congress won't. So, you know, when Congress failed to pass equal pay legislation, I made sure that women got more protection in their fight for fair pay in the workplace. Because I think that when women succeed, everybody succeeds. I want my daughters paid the same as your sons for doing the same job. Congress had the chance to pass a law that would help lower interest rates on student loans. They didn't pass it. I acted on my own to give millions of Americans a chance to cap their payments, the program that Victor's taken advantage of. I don't want our young people just saddled with debt before they've even gotten started in life. When it comes to the minimum wage, last week marked 5 years since the last time the minimum wage went up. Now, you know the cost of living went up. Minimum wage didn't go up. So I went ahead on my own when it came to federal contractors. I said, you want to get a federal contract, you got to pay your workers at least $10.10 an hour. And I've been trying to work with governors and mayors. I've been trying to work with governors and mayors, in some cases with business owners, just calling them up directly. How about giving your folks a raise? And some of them have done it. And you know, since I first asked Congress to raise the minimum wage, businesses like The Gap, you got 13 states in D.C., they've gone ahead and raised their minimum wage. It makes a difference in people's lives. And by the way, here's something interesting. The states that have increased their minimum wage this year, they've seen higher job growth than the states that didn't increase their minimum wage. So remember, you give them a little more money, businesses have more customers. They got more customers, they make more profit. They make more profit, what do? They hire more workers. America deserves a raise, and it's good for everybody. So some of the things we're doing without Congress are making a difference, but we could do so much more if Congress would just come on and help out a little bit. Just come on. Come on and help out a little bit. St- Stop being mad all the time. Stop. Stop. Stop just hating all the time. Come on. Let's get some work done together. You know, we actually did pass this this Workforce Training Act, and it was bipartisan. There were Republicans and Democrats, and everybody was all pleased. They came. We had a bill signing. They were all in their suits, and I said, "Doesn't this feel good? We're doing something. It's like useful. Nobody's shouting at each other. You know, it was really nice." I said, "Let's do this again. Let's do it more often." I mean, I know they're not that happy that I'm president, but that's okay. Come on. I've only got a couple years left. Come on, let's get some work done. Then you can be mad at the next president. Look, we've got just today and tomorrow until Congress leaves town for a month. And we've still got some serious work to do. We've still got a chance to put people to work rebuilding roads and bridges, and the highway trust fund's running out of money. We've got to get that done. We've got to get some resources to fight wildfires out west. Help, that's a serious situation. We need more resources to deal with the situation in the southern part of the border, right, with some of those kids. We've got to be able to deal with that in a proper way. So there's a bunch of stuff that needs to get done. Unfortunately, I think the main vote, correct me if I'm wrong here, Congressman, the main vote that they've scheduled for today is whether or not they decide to sue me for doing my job. No. First of all, here's something I always say. Do not boo. Vote. Booing doesn't help. Voting helps. But think about this. They have announced that they're going to sue me for taking executive actions to help people. So, they're mad because I'm doing my job. And by the way, I've told them, I said, I'd be happy to do it with you. So the only reason I'm doing it on my own is because you don't do anything. But if you want, let's work together. Now, I mean, everybody recognizes this is a political stunt, but it's worse than that because every vote they're taking like that means a vote they're not taking to actually help you. You know, when they had taken 50 votes to repeal the Affordable Care Act, that was time that could have been spent working constructively to help you on some things. And by the way, you know who's paying for this suit they're going to file? You. No, you're paying for it. And it's estimated that by the time the thing was done, I would already left office. So it's not a productive thing to do. But here's what I want people to remember. Every single day, as depressing sometimes as what goes on in Washington may be, I see the inherent goodness and generosity of the American people. I see it every day. Yeah, I see it in all of you. I saw it in the four people that I had dinner with last night. You know, in addition to Victor, one guy who joined us was a guy named Mark Turner. He works with high school dropouts to help get them back on track. Used to be a successful corporate executive, decided he wanted to give something back. You got Valerie McCarl. Valerie is a single mom, engineer, owns a small business. She's doing great things, you know, even though sometimes it's a struggle making sure that you know, she keeps her business afloat. She's persevered and is helping her son get his college education. Then you got Becky Forrest. She's a fire plug. She's president of the Town Fork Creek Neighborhood Association. She's got so many things going on, after school programs and mentoring programs and basketball leagues and all kinds of things at a community center. I couldn't keep track of all of it. And to listen to them talk, it made you optimistic. You know, it reminded you, there are good people out here. Everybody's out there trying to do their best, trying to look after their families, trying to raise their kids, trying to give something back, working with their church, working with their synagogues, working with their places of faith. You know, just trying to give something back and give some meaning to their lives, and they're responsible. And we all make mistakes, and you know, we all have regrets, but generally speaking, people are decent. And so the question is, you know, how can we do a better job of capturing that spirit in Washington, in our government? Because the American people are working harder than ever to support families, to strengthen communities. And so instead of suing me for doing my job, I want Congress to do its job and make life a little better for the Americans who sent them there in the first place. Stop posturing. And by the way, there's one place to start. I talked about this last week, but I want to talk about it a little more. Right now, there's a loophole in the tax code that lets a small but growing group of corporations leave the country, say they declare themselves no longer American companies, just to get out of paying their fair share of taxes, even though most of their operations are here. They've always been American companies. They took advantage of all the benefits of being an American company, but now their accountant has convinced them maybe they can get out of paying some taxes. You know, they're renouncing their citizenship, even though they're keeping most of the business here. And, I mean, it's just an accounting trick, but it hurts our country's finances, and it adds to the deficits. And it sticks you with the tab, because if they're not paying their fair share, stashing their money offshore, you don't have that option. It ain't right. Not only is it not right, it ain't right. So, it ain't right. I hope everybody's clear on the distinction. There are some things that are not right. And then there's some things that just ain't right. And this ain't right. You know, I mean, you don't have accountants figuring all this stuff out for you, trying to game the system. These companies shouldn't either. And they shouldn't turn their back on the country that made their success possible. And by the way, this can be fixed. For the last 2 years, I've put forward plans to cut corporate taxes, make close loopholes, make it more reliable, make it clearer. And to Republicans, I say, join with me. Let's work to close this unpatriotic tax loophole for good. Let's use the savings that we get from closing the loophole to invest in things like education that are good for everybody. Don't double down on top-down economics. Let's really fight to make sure that everybody gets a chance. And by the way, that everybody plays by the same rules. We could do so much more if we've got that kind of economic patriotism that says we rise or fall as one nation and as one people. And that's what Victor believes. You know, when Victor wrote me his letter, he said, I believe regardless of political party, we can all do something to help our citizens to have a chance at a job, have food in their stomachs, have access to great education and health care. That's what economic patriotism is. That's what we should all be working on. Instead of tax breaks for folks who don't need them, to give tax breaks to working families to help them pay for child care and college. Don't reward companies shipping jobs overseas. Let's give tax breaks to companies investing right here in Missouri, right here in the Midwest. Let's give every citizen access to preschool and college and and affordable health care. And let's make sure women get a fair wage. Let's make sure anybody who's working full-time isn't living in poverty. These are not un-American ideas. These are patriotic ideas. This is how we built America. So just remember this. The hardest thing to do is to bring about real change. It's hard. You've got a stubborn status quo. And folks in Washington, sometimes they're focused on everything but your concerns. And their special interests and their lobbyists, and they're paid to maintain the status quo that it's working for somebody. And they're counting on you getting cynical, so you don't vote and you don't get involved, and people just say, you know what, none of this is going to make a difference. And the more you do that, then the more power the special interests have, and the more entrenched the status quo becomes. You can't afford to be cynical. Cynicism is fashionable sometimes. You see it all over our culture, all over TV. Everybody likes just putting stuff down and being cynical and being negative, and that shows somehow that you're sophisticated and you're cool. You know what? Cynicism didn't put a man on the moon. Cynicism didn't win women the right to vote. Cynicism did not get a Civil Rights Act signed. Cynicism has never won a war. Cynicism has never cured a disease. Cynicism has never started a business. Cynicism has never fed a young mind. I do not believe in a cynical America. I believe in an optimistic America that is making progress. And I believe despite unyielding opposition, there are workers right now who have jobs who didn't have them before because of what we've done. And folks who got health care who didn't have it because of the work that we've done. And students who are going to college who couldn't afford it before. And troops who've come home after tour of duty because of what we've done. You don't have time to be cynical. Hope is a better choice. That's what I need you for. Thank you very much, everybody. God bless you.
You're listening to KCUR 89.3 FM. Special coverage here on Up to Date of President Obama speaking live at the Uptown Theater in Kansas City, Missouri. President spoke for about 32 minutes. He's just now leaving the podium, stepping down, shaking hands with some folks in the crowd. He spoke in shirt sleeves, took off his jacket, looked very relaxed. The tone of his speech was very relaxed. A flurry of cell phone cameras being whipped out now as folks get a chance to be up close with the president. We're going to stay with you through the rest of this hour, bringing you some analysis and commentary and reflecting a little bit on the speech we just heard. It was a speech about the economy. The president began by painting a very positive picture of the economy. He spoke first about some of the positive numbers that have been reported, including some this morning, reported that second quarter earnings for American businesses are up. He talked about the unemployment rate being at the lowest it has been in a long time. He talked about the U.S. as the world's number one oil and gas producer. He talked about students earning college degrees, about home prices rising, about business leaders saying that the United States is now the number one place to invest. But then he turned his attention to Congress, accused them of not doing their job. He told the crowd, you're doing your job. Imagine how much stronger we'd be, how much stronger our economy would be if Congress was doing its job, too. Then the president laid out his what he called an opportunity agenda and said that he's taking steps that Congress won't take. He's going to take them through executive orders and listed a number of his what he sees as accomplishments. And then finally called on the crowd not to be cynical, but in fact told them at one point, don't boo, vote. Booing doesn't help. Voting helps. President, as I said, spoke for about 32 minutes, had the crowd pretty riled up for the most part. We're joined now by Dave Helling, a reporter for the Kansas City Star, often with us here on Up to Date. And he is at the Uptown Theater, just heard the speech. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
So, Dave, what were you listening for in the speech, and did you hear it?
Well, I was listening to some degree for some sort of specific agenda. You didn't really get that. It was really a repetition of some of the other things, Brian, that that the president has talked about before. You heard the minimum wage. You heard college costs, a rather robust defense of the Affordable Care Act. But the president did seem as feisty as I've seen him in some time. He seemed ready, as you suggest, to try to take the take the argument to the Congress. At one point, you may recall, he said, stop being mad all the time. Stop this hating all the time. That's a pretty aggressive approach to the Congress, which, as you know, may vote this afternoon to take him to court over some of his executive actions. So I think, you know, I saw a president who felt like, A, he needed to defend his record, B, had a record to defend, and then C, decided to take the fight to the Republicans in Congress.
Well, I mean, you were there in the room, Dave. It really did. You used the word feisty. It felt a little like a campaign appearance, which is interesting when you're the sitting president.
Yeah, campaign appearance were more like a bit of a revival meeting. There was some call and response going. At one point, the president said, it isn't right, and it ain't right, and that got quite a reaction in the back of the room where I was taking notes. You know, he does still enjoy a lot of support, and I think he's really continuing to focus, as he said in his remarks, on, you know, people who may feel as if they've missed out on the recovery. He has some good news to talk about. The new second quarter GDP figure of a 4% growth is pretty dramatic. But I think he senses a lot of people don't really feel that in their lives, particularly folks who may be working for lower wages or have other family challenges. And so I think he tried to address them today. And the reaction was quite warm, quite aggressive, a lot of yelling from my part of the room, from people agreeing with the president. So in that sense, it was more relaxed than sort of a formal address that you might have seen on another occasion.
You wrote earlier this week in the Star, Dave, about these speeches on the economy that the president seems to keep coming back to the Kansas City area to give again and again. What's that about? Why come here to talk about the economy?
Well, you know, there's a lot of speculation about that. I do get the sense that he has an affection for what he calls middle America, and he referred to that several times in his remarks today. He does that when he comes out to this part of the country. I think he does feel some connection with folks away from the coasts. You do get a real sense in talking to or listening to the president that he grows tired of the ordinary debates we have in Washington. And he's not alone in that, of course. You know, there a lot of people get tired of the sort of back and forth between Congress and the president. And so I think it rejuvenates him a little bit, and you saw that today, when he gets to come out, talk to some normal people, talk to folks in the middle of the country. Now, you know, whether does he have new things to offer? Not really. You didn't hear a lot of this speech that was brand new or aggressively, you know, part of an agenda or a challenge to the Congress. He, you know, let's raise the minimum wage. Let's work on the student loans. Let's do some other things. I think that's what you heard a lot.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, you heard the claims about the economy, a pretty positive picture, at least about the parts of the economy that the president feels like he's had something to do with. Are those accurate? Do you feel like those? It's a fair listing of positive economic indicators to say progress is being made?
Well, yes. I mean, the deficit is lower than it used to be. I mean, we, you know, people forget what the depth of the recession that we went through in 2009, 2010. Now, how much credit the president or the government deserves for that is the subject of some debate. But I still sense, and I think he feels, again, based on his remarks today, that there are some people who don't feel the recovery, don't feel it in their bones, don't feel as if their job opportunities are better, or that their incomes are rising, or that the Affordable Care Act, for example, plays any significant role in their lives. Maybe they get insurance at work. And so I think, and that feeling that somehow the recovery is missing some people may hurt the Democrats at the polls this fall. And if that happens, getting any part of his agenda through in the last 2 years will be even more difficult than it's been so far, and it's been nearly impossible. So, you know, I do think he feels, his political team feels, that he needs to get out and encourage people to understand that not everyone is feeling the effects of the economic recovery. They need to get to the polls and vote, and to give him a chance in the last 2 years to do some more things. It's a shot from the three-point line, but it may be the only shot he can take.
Dave, I know you've got a story to file. Let me ask you, though, you were in the room. I don't know where or what, whether you were able to hear it, but it seemed that the president's speech was delayed initially with some protesting or some demonstration of some kind in the theater. We couldn't see that on the feed. What was going on in there?
I don't know for sure. It did seem as if someone in the upper part of the auditorium shouted out something. It may have been of a religious nature, because I think the president said, "I believe in God," or made some reference to faith. I don't know. It was disruptive, you know, to a certain degree at the beginning, and then it went away. But it was in the upper part of the theater. I don't know precisely what happened. We'll have to do a little bit more reporting to get a sense of that.
We'll see what I can find out. Finally, Dave, just a political question. You know, the president really set himself up in an adversarial role against Congress in this speech. Too big a stretch in this day and age, but he really presented himself as the outsider. He said, "Folks in Washington, they're concerned with everything but your concerns." Hey, he's been the president for almost 6 years. He's a folk in Washington, right?
Right. Although, didn't you sense, or I certainly did, Brian, that I did get a sense that the disgust or the disappointment in Congress is pretty palpable among the people who are in this room. I do think. And the polls suggest that congressional approval is dramatically lower than it is even for the president, who is as unpopular as he's ever been. You know, taking shots at Congress, is almost a requirement for a president in his position. People just don't like what their elected leaders are doing. Whether that, you know, has any impact on how people vote in the fall, or that the makeup of the Congress has changed, is a very open question. And so I think his strategy politically is simply to say, hey, look, you've got to get out there and vote. Otherwise, the things that you're maddest about, you'll continue to be mad about. And that was what this effort was about today. Again, it's a little bit of a conundrum, because there are no real competitive House races in this area this year. The Senate races are not compelling at all. Of course, there is no Senate race in Missouri. So, again, why politically he picked Kansas City, we're not sure, but he's got a message. He tried to communicate it today.
Maybe it was the barbecue.
Well, it's largely the barbecue. And as you know, at the beginning, he said, hey, look, I'm not going to pick among barbecues. So Bryant gets its moment in the sun. Shine, and then we go on.
Yes, well, he is a politician, after all.
Yes, indeed.
That's Dave Helling of the Kansas City Star. He's joining us live at the Uptown Theater, where he just heard President Obama speak. Dave, thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us this morning.
Great to be with you.
We are also joined this morning by Robert Rowland. He's professor of communication studies at the University of Kansas. He's going to spend a few minutes with us talking about the speech as a speech. Dr. Rowland, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
I'm curious what you thought of this presidential address as an address, as a speech.
Well, Obama, I think the comment that Obama's saying the same things he always says is exactly right, because he has a very consistent agenda aimed at rebalancing the American dream to give more opportunities for middle-income and working-class Americans than they've had. So I think he basically, this was a continuation of the themes that he really enunciated first at Osawatomie, Kansas, in the very beginning of the 2012 campaign.
Yeah, we've noted that the president does seem to come back to this area to talk about the economy, and I'm glad you mentioned that speech in Osawatomie. How did this compare to that address?
Well, it's a little bit, it's more confrontational toward Congress, and it's less focused on the problem of lack of opportunity, the income gap, although there were some comments about tax cuts for the ultra-rich. But it's still basically the same theme, that we need to make sure there's opportunity for people who are working hard, who are doing their part, and not just for the ultra-rich in society. But this was clearly, I think it was a campaign speech for the upcoming midterms aimed at core Democratic voters, many of them who turn out in general elections but not midterms, and are Democratic-leaning independents. And I think he comes to Kansas City because while they're not competitive seats, it's middle America where he has to aim his core message. And I think it was an odd speech in a way, because it combined two themes that you don't often see together. He reminded me of Harry Truman running against the do-nothing Congress. But he also, in the part of the speech at the very beginning where he talked about all the progress had been made, he reminded me of Ronald Reagan in 1984 and the Good Morning America campaign. Now, we're not exactly good morning in America because a lot of people are still hurting. And I think that's how he tried to hold together those two themes in the speech, that we really could have that morning in America, in his view, if Congress would help out a bit, as he said.
He's in a tough spot as a second-term president to celebrate his accomplishments while at the same time criticizing Congress for not accomplishing anything. At the end of the day, it's either going well or it isn't going well.
Well, that's right. I think he has drawn the conclusion, though, that criticizing Congress has no cost to him and can only help him. As you know, he said in the speech, you know, they've voted 50 times in the House to repeal the Affordable Care Act. How much madder at him can they be? I think his judgment is like Harry Truman, that his best chance is to run against them. And on particular issues like the minimum wage, his views do poll pretty well. His overall approval rating doesn't match that. But again and again on economic issues, you know, not a huge majority, but 50, sometimes 60% or more are on the president's side on those issues.
All right. Dr. Rowland, stay with us for a minute, if you would. I'm going to take a moment. We're going to talk with State Senator Jason Holzman. He's a Democrat from the southern part of Kansas City, Missouri. Senator Holzman, thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us this morning.
Glad to be with you.
You were out there in the crowd this morning, saw you earlier today. What'd you think of the president's speech? Was it what you were expecting?
Well, I thought it was a great speech. The messaging was hope and optimism. It recounted some of the accomplishments that the administration has been able to do, really what the American people have been able to do in spite of Congress ineptitude. And you'll have to excuse me, the president's coming out. So if you hear some cheering in the background, that would be that.
We appreciate the live reporting from the scene there, Senator Holzman. I'm curious, you as a local elected official, as a Democrat of the president's party, we heard from Dave Helling a little bit ago that it's an interesting choice to be here when there's not really any close congressional races in this area for the president to come right at a campaign time. What does it mean to local elected officials to have the president here? Why would he come here, in your view?
Well, the city of Kansas City has really done a good job of being a progressive city, not just from a legislative policy standpoint, but our entrepreneurial investments that we've had. I believe the city of Kansas City's best days are in front of it. We're a close-knit community that has a lot of major attractions, but we still have a small-town feel when it comes to our traffic. And if you're in one of the suburban schools, you've got great school districts and a good place to raise your family. And I think the president, his connection with this economic recovery has been for Main Street, the average citizen and the average American who's pulling their weight and doing what they can, making the investments, taking the risks, being entrepreneurial in nature. And Kansas City is a leading example of that, and I think that's where he wanted to highlight. It's not the progress doesn't come from Washington, D.C. The success doesn't come from Congress. It comes from the American people, and we have seen those people rise above this economic recession and start to turn things right. And I think you wanted to highlight that.
That's State Senator Jason Holzman, Democrat representing Kansas City in Jefferson City. Jason, Senator Holzman, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Anytime.
Appreciate it very much. Let's go back to Dr. Robert Rowland. He's a professor of communication studies at you know what, Dr. Rowland, I'm going to ask you to hold on just one more moment because I understand that Kansas City Mayor Sly James is now with us. Mayor James, thank you so much for taking a moment with us this morning.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thank you. You had a chance to be with the president. You were there at the airport to greet him last night. You were there at the speech today. What did you expect to hear, and what did you hear?
Well, I think I expected to hear what I really did hear, and that is a call to create and continue to build an economy that works for everybody and one that actually spreads economic prosperity beyond the limits where it currently exists. Things such as a fair wage for people to live on, equal pay for women, increasing the minimum wage. But he also talked about doing things that I've always agreed with. One is making decisions now that will have an impact on our future. We've got to do those types of things to do it. But what he said was, is the challenge is how do we have an economy that works for everybody and that decreases the income gap for those of us in this country.
In your experience as mayor these last few years, do you feel like Kansas Citians are the people the president needs to be encouraging in this regard? Are they experiencing the kind of hardship he's talking about?
I think that everybody in this country, every place in this country has pockets of it, but we certainly do. Although we have a relatively low unemployment rate, that unemployment rate in the minority communities is significantly higher, sometimes 2 to 3 times higher than the majority unemployment rate. That's unacceptable. We still have issues with such things as third grade reading proficiency, where the average across the city is 38%. At one point in time, the average in the KCPS was 19%. You know, those are the predictors that tell us whether or not our people are going to do well or poorly as they grow up. And we still are not addressing those things like we need to. So, yeah, I think that the message that he delivered today is one that we in Kansas City certainly can heed and take advantage of. But it's something that's not unique to us. But I also was encouraged by what he also said about some of the positive things that are going on. You know, fight the cynicism, stay positive, get out and vote. Stay focused on accomplishing and not so much focused on cynicism.
Mayor James, I also wanted to ask you, obviously the president coming to Kansas City is a big deal on a number of levels. What does it mean to you to have the president here in the city, both symbolically and just logistically? A lot of police presence, a lot of road blockages. How does that work for you as mayor?
Well, you know, I know that the people can be slightly inconvenienced by road blockage, but you know, at the end of the day, seriously, we're going to let a road blockage be something that we focus on, rather than the fact that the leader of the free world has come to our city twice in the last 10 months. To me, that's much more significant because I think it speaks to the quality of our city and the reputation that we're gaining around the entire country. Outside of Kansas City, we're actually considered to be pretty progressive and doing some pretty good things over the last few years. The difficulty sometimes is convincing the folks inside the city that we're as good as we actually are. And that's something that I have to continue to work on every day to make sure that people understand how truly blessed we are to live in a city of this caliber with the type of people we have.
That's...
The fact that the President of the United States has been to this city twice in 10 months is a huge compliment to the people of this city and the things that we're doing.
And that's where we'll have to leave it. That's Kansas City, Missouri Mayor Sly James, who was at the President's speech this morning. Mayor James, thank you so much for being with us.
No problem. Thank you.
My thanks also to Dr. Robert Rowland of the University of Kansas Communications Department for his thoughts about the address, Kansas City Star reporter Dave Helling, and earlier KCUR's Peggy Lowe, as well as State Senator Jason Holzman. KCUR has brought you this broadcast on Up to Date. Up to Date is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Scott Ross, and Hannah Copeland. Don't forget, you can find all of our broadcasts, including this one, at kcur.org. You can follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date.